The following is a paid program on this station.
Welcome back to the second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umep. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine, while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. And now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umep, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And welcome to Leading Edge Medicine. Good morning. I'm Lynette, here with Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umep, and taking your phone calls, 800-465-8770. Let's head south to, South Tacoma. We have, Olympia. Let's see here. We are going to take Bill. Hi, Bill. Good morning.
Good morning.
What can we do for you?
I'll find out what the doctors can tell me about the new process called Inspire that they've been advertising on television to replace CPAP machines.
Well, it's not for everybody, that's for sure. It is a small device. It's got a battery controller, an implant that actually fits under the skin, and it's got a electrode that runs down to the, I'm trying to remember which nerve it is. I think it's a hypoglossal nerve. I'm not sure. And at night before you go to bed, you use your little app on your phone. You turn on your device. It stimulates the nerve that then pulls your tongue back and out of the way so that it doesn't fall into your airway and allows you to sleep. So if you're one of those people whose sleep apnea is due to obstructive sleep apnea from your tongue position, the Inspire works pretty darn well. It is a foreign material. You are putting something, you know, extraneous into your body. And, you know, it does require an electrical current to stimulate this. So, but in many ways, I guess the surgical aspects of it are probably somewhat similar to putting in a pacemaker. It's a stimulator that goes to a specific nerve that moves your tongue. Does that help any?
Yes, I think my sleep apnea is more or less caused by a deviated septum and GERD that comes up from my stomach in my nasal cavity.
See, there are several different.
I wouldn't help it then.
No, it probably wouldn't. And this, you know, this is, device is not for everybody. There are several different forms of sleep apnea. There's central sleep apnea, in which the brain simply does not respond effectively to the carbon dioxide levels. Normally, we take a breath as our carbon dioxide levels rise just a little bit, or our oxygen levels drop a little bit. So we've got these brainstem kind of built-in automatic functions. And in some people, especially some folks that have got degenerative neurologic diseases or have had a stroke and so on, they may have damaged that mechanism. And so they just don't remember to breathe at night, which, you know, can be really bad. But then you've got the obstructive sleep apneas, and that sounds like it may be what you're facing. This can be an obstruction of the airway anywhere from the nose right down to the larynx. You can get soft tissues that are either hypertrophied and gotten too big, or they lose muscle tone and they get floppy and loose and fall into the airway at night. And I know Dr. Samira's husband, Sunil Umep, is an ENT surgeon, and he does a lot of that. He does a lot of diagnosis of running scopes into your nose and down your airway, looking for causes for obstructive sleep apnea. And he can often use radio frequency generators to shrink those tissues and get them out of the way so that you don't need CPAP at night. I've had several staff members through the years that he has worked on and gotten them very good results and stopped their snoring and stopped their CPAP use while letting them breathe at night. So, you know, you might want to get evaluated by someone like Dr. Sunil Umat. He's over at the University of Washington these days. But, you know, from what I've seen, has always done really great work with my people.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the information.
All right. Take care, sir.
Thank you, Bill.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Uh-huh. Bye.
Your questions and phone calls today on Leading Edge Medicine. We can take your call. Phone lines are open at 800-465-8770. Now heading to Tacoma, we have Phil on the line. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning.
Hi there.
Good morning to all of you. I have a question about protein, Dr. Mixon.
All right.
Actually, it's a multi-part question. I've heard you talk a lot about protein and the importance of protein in a diet, but at the same time, you talk about how a lot of meat consumption is not a good thing either. So my question is how you get enough protein in your, let's see, how many grams of protein should a person consume every day, and how can they do that and still maintain a calorie deficit?
Okay, well, let's start. Protein is the lowest calorie nutrient you got. As far as the three nutrients are fat, carbohydrate, and protein. Okay, protein takes the most energy to metabolize, to break it down, because you have to break down the protein into a constituent amino acids and then use those amino acids. And our bodies don't burn protein very efficiently. You know, the first thing we burn are simple sugars, simple carbohydrates. Then we'll go to fat. Then we go to protein. Okay. So preferentially, we will select carbs as our preferred nutrient if we get a choice. But for most of human history, when we were developing as a species, simple carbohydrates were pretty rare. You know, the carbs that we got were basically roots and leaves. They were seeds and grains that would be available in the fall when the grains came available. But until we actually started domesticating wheat and oats and rye and rice, those were the big four, wheat, oats, rye, and rice, people just ate catch as catch can. And so, you know, we would eat the highest fatty foods we could possibly get. That's why we find fatty foods so tasty. That this is a holdover from our ancestors. You know, people talk about intermittent fasting. Mm. Our ancestors did not have agriculture. Mm-hmm. They did not intermittently fast. They intermittently ate.
Ate, yeah. That's true.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, our teeth and our claws are pretty puny.
Yeah.
And so we cannot compete in a dog-eat-dog sort of world very well. We had to use our brains. Mm. And so a lot of the time, you know, we ate the things we could find, and those were basically vegetables, fruits, grains, roots, tubers, and things that had a lot of fiber in them. And then we learned to start domesticating grains. We learned to hunt. But even then, our hunting tended to be things we could catch the easiest, like fish. Mm. So we evolved the ability to consume and use those best. Older people need more protein than young people. As you age, your protein metabolism becomes less and less efficient. And so you need more protein to compensate for your less efficient protein metabolism. People in their 60s and 70s need about twice as much protein per mass of body mass as a healthy young person. But even then, it varies on what your lifestyle is. If you're exercising heavily and you're using a lot of muscle, you need more protein to make more muscle. If you have a sedentary lifestyle, less protein is going to be necessary. Bodybuilders should eat about 2 grams of protein per kilo of lean body mass. Okay. So you get your body mass looked at. You do something like an in-body. We tell you what is your lean body mass compared to your fat mass. And if you are active and working out, or if you're elderly, you want about 2 grams of protein per kilo of lean mass. Okay. If you are sedentary or younger, 1 gram of protein per lean mass is just fine. Okay. It's not the protein I worry about when I tell people to limit their red meat. It's the fats from the red meat. And mostly even there, it's the way we cook our red meats. Grilling your meat is probably the most dangerous, worst effective way to fix meat. Okay. And so if you're going to grill, you want to take the fat off. You want to even chicken. Take the skin off and grill the breast without the skin on. Now you're going to find that's less tasty because our ancestors only ate when food was available. There were no grocery stores. And so what our instinctive pattern has been through the ages is in the summer and fall when food was available, we ate as much as we could and we gained as much fat as we could. Because winter was coming.
No, that's right.
And there wasn't going to be much food available in the winter. And if you went in the winter skinny, you died.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't get to have babies. Mm. And so you got weeded out of the gene pool. Mm. So what happens with modern man is it was survival of the chubbies in the olden days.
Mm.
Okay. The fatter you went into winter, the better your chances of surviving to have babies in the spring.
Mm. So that instinct has carried over, and I thought it was just Thanksgiving and Christmas that made
yeah.
us fat.
Yeah, no. What's up it's, with that? Yeah.
It is built right into our genome.
Yeah.
We find the highest fat, the highest carbohydrate, the least long-term healthy foods you can possibly find as the tastiest.
Mm.
And that's what we crave because that's what kept our ancestors alive.
Mm.
Okay. But now we have an unending supply of high-fat, high-calorie food.
Yeah,
it's available 24/7 every day of our lives, and our instinct says, eat it.
Mm.
When we ask you to diet, we are actually asking you to do an inherently unnatural act. Eat less than your body wants.
Mm.
Okay? Mm. And not enough of us have the won't power to do that.
Well, again, based on what you just said, it's a genetic instinct because, yes, they didn't have the food, but we have it. So our instinct is eat when you can find it.
Yes. But I will point out that in a civilized society, we have to learn to ignore some of our instincts.
Yes.
As a healthy, yes. high-testosterone, aggressive male, in order for the females of the world to be safe, I have to ignore some of my instincts.
All right.
Oh, just the way it is.
That's how it is. Phil, what were you saying?
Well, I appreciate that information. That's good stuff. A little backstory here. I lost about 60 pounds over the last 4.5 years.
Uh-huh.
I eat a high protein, low carbohydrate diet. I work out 3 times a week, and I run a pretty high testosterone.
Good.
Total testosterone level. So my question is, how do I get like 120 grams of protein a day and still run a calorie deficit?
Okay. We got to remember it's 35 grams per ounce. Okay. So you're talking about 4 ounces of protein a day total. It's not that much. Right. You can do that with tofu, with chicken, with fish, with
protein
a bit of
drinks.
Beef, protein drinks,
yeah.
All kinds of ways to get 4 ounces of protein a day in your system.
Does that help
well,
you, Phil?
How do I get 120?
Well, again, 4 ounces. You're not after 120 ounces. There's 35 grams.
120 grams.
Right. There's 35 grams per ounce. Okay.
Okay.
So 4 ounces is 140 grams of protein. Not much.
4 ounces
not
of
much.
What?
4 ounces of protein. 4 ounces of protein, okay. Whether it's fish, meat, beef, tofu, beans. There's all kinds of proteins in this world, and getting 4 ounces a day in should not be that difficult.
Okay.
All right.
Well, I appreciate that.
Take care, sir. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Phil. We'll be back with your calls and more Leading Edge Medicine in just a moment. Phone lines are open for you at 800-465-8770. We'll be right back.
I had gone to my doctor, but I found out I had osteoporosis. She wanted me to go on the traditional female hormones. And then I heard Dr. Mixon on the radio. Then I realized there were really good options that were different, and I didn't have to take the traditional route. Within 3 months of being a patient at Longevity, I had my energy back. I could feel happy again.
You make me feel so young. You make me feel so spring has sprung. And every time I see you grin, I'm such a happy individual. The moment that you speak, I wanna go play hide and seek. I wanna go and bounce the moon just like a toy balloon. You and I.
Welcome back. Like it's Leading Edge Medicine. I love that. You make me feel so young. And that's what Leading Edge Medicine is about. Longevity is all about making you feel, well, not necessarily young, but stronger and faster,
well,
leaner
we were,
and smarter and sexier.
Bandy and I first got together. I sang that song for a couple of times because
it was
time,
true.
I was 57. She was 27.
There you go.
So, you want to sing to her again? Is she listening?
Well, let's have Dr. Mixon sing it on the show. Yeah.
She doesn't like to listen on Saturday mornings because if she listens, our daughter hears the show.
Oh.
And she doesn't like our 9-year-old to hear all the references
all the
to sexuality.
That you make. Okay. Is she telling you something? Not so subtly.
And she said, well, the problem is that our daughter is reading adult books.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And adult books have a fair bit of sexuality in it.
Yeah.
You know, and so she's asking questions.
Yeah.
That, you know, would not come up if she were reading children's books.
Mm.
But she is bored with children's books. She says, you know, they're simple, they're sappy, and the stories aren't complex.
Uh-huh.
So she is churning through some adult novels that just, you know, the boy who followed his father into Auschwitz.
Mm. Oh.
And this was, you know, I mean, it's a big 300-page book all about, you know, what went on in Auschwitz and the you know, escaping and so on.
Oh, she's too young to be reading that.
But she absolutely insists. She she gets done. She goes through these books in a matter of days. Mm. She's a voracious reader. She consumes them.
Loves information.
Yeah. Mm. But then, you know, she asked Daddy some questions such as, Dad, I know that I'm a piece of mommy meat. She said, I understand that I grew in mommy's belly and that I would come out through her bottom. But with her, you did the surgery to take me out. She said, and I understand all of that. She said, but what does the man have to do with all of this?
All right.
And how did I become part of yours?
Uh-huh. Oh, okay.
And
that's a whole nother show, Dr. Mixon.
Oh, my, you know, I'm sitting there.
Dr. Mixon.
She's asking me this in the middle of piano practice.
Uh-huh.
You know? And I'm saying, pay attention to Mozart.
Yeah. Do your scales. Do your scales.
Oh, boy. Too early.
Yeah, we may have to address that on another day.
Just shut up and leave me alone.
Just be a kid.
I'm a doctor, not a... Oh, wait. Okay, wait, now would be a good time to take a phone call. And we are taking yours. Here's our number.
But you know, kids these days are asking questions earlier and earlier.
Oh, yeah.
And every generation says that. And I've been noticing that, too. You know, the questions are different. Every generation goes through their own issues.
You know, my oldest daughter hit 12. And, well, I guess she was 13. She started having her periods. So it was time to have that talk.
The talk.
Yeah.
Because now she's got. So I sat her down now that she's menstruating and is physiologically a woman and bad things can happen. So I sat her down. I got out my Frank Netter books, the Netter illustrations,
You
know,
yes,
the human reproductive tract.
That's right. That's right.
Showed her the ovaries and the tubes and the uterus, you know, and the vagina and then the testicles and the seminal vesicles and the penis and so on. And I explained the mechanics of how women get pregnant. And she sat there patiently through the entire thing, looking at the diagrams and the pictures. And at the end, she said, "Dad, that's disgusting.
I know.
I'm never going to do that. Hold that thought, sweetheart. But if and when you change your mind, come tell me before you tell the boy."
There you go. Yeah, talk to Daddy first. There you go.
You're asking for a lot there, Jerry.
There you go. Yes.
She actually did.
Good for her.
She actually did. When she was at that point in her life, she came to Dad and said, "Dad, I can't wait any longer. I'm going to have sex with Ryan." Okay, let's get you protected.
All right. Taken care of. We've got a phone caller. Here's our number, 800-465-8770. Headed to Bellevue. Let's talk to Bill. Good morning, Bill.
Hello, Bill.
Hi.
How can I help you,
sir? Dr. Mixon. Put a question to you.
Okay.
70 years old, 5'10", about 187 pounds, athletic, worked out much of my younger life, began supplementing with bioidentical testosterone transdermal cream at about age 57.
Okay.
And PSA numbers, prostate-specific antigen numbers, have always been low, between 1.5 and 2 throughout most of my 60s.
Yeah.
6 months ago, my PSA was 2.5. That's good. My latest measure, 5 days ago, had risen to 3.05. Mm-hmm. And I am interested in your thoughts about the velocity of the rise.
Right. Well, velocity of rise is important. If the rise is due to a prostate cancer, and that's an if. There are other things that cause a rise in PSA, okay? Prostate-specific antigen rises with anything that increases metabolic rate in the prostate. And the most common is not prostate cancer, it's inflammation, okay? So anything that causes inflammation in the prostate will raise your PSA. And I have seen PSAs go from 1.5 to 6 in a matter of 6 months. And it was never a prostate cancer. It was almost always a inflammatory process of some sort. But if that rise is due to a prostate cancer, then a doubling of PSA in less than a year is a bad prognostic sign. Men who have a tumor that is doubling in volume, hence doubling in PSA production, in less than a year usually indicates a fast-growing tumor, and fast-growing tumors, by their nature, have a tendency to spread, to metastasize outside of the prostate earlier.
Okay, wait. Mm-hmm. I think you're getting a little ahead. He's 70. He's still in the normal range.
He is.
And he's more likely to have BPH and inflammation or an infection.
I just hung the crepe. Now let me go back. See, this is something in medicine we call hanging crepe.
Okay.
They used to hang crepes at funerals where people would mourn. So first you hang the crepe and you let the guy know, wait a minute, this is serious. I better pay attention.
Getting his attention.
Then you go back.
We're not going to the funeral yet.
No.
That's right.
No.
Okay. The thing about your history that caused me concern is you've been on testosterone for a long time, which in and of itself is not terribly concerning. men on testosterone supplementation get prostate cancer at exactly the same rate as men that are not on testosterone supplementation.
That's right.
Okay. And in fact, men who maintain high testosterone loads tend to get aggressive tumors somewhat less often than men with low testosterone. Okay. Yeah. Testosterone deficiency is more likely to trigger an aggressive tumor.
Yeah.
Though you get tumors overall at the same rate. The thing that does concern me is you didn't describe that you were on progesterone during that period. You've just been on testosterone.
And, correct.
And you see, in the prostate, there are estrogen receptors. And in men, there are primarily alpha estrogen receptors. And alpha receptors, when they are faced with not enough progesterone, change their function. In young men, the high progesterone levels of youth keep those alpha receptors from being very dangerous. But as your progesterone levels drop with age, the alpha estrogen receptors are altered at 127 different loci in that receptor. And they actually begin to immortalize the prostate cells. And by immortalizing the cells, by making the cells live longer and die slower, the prostate begins to grow. And the growing prostate, because you have now more prostate volume, will give you rising PSA. And that's what she was referring to is prostatic hypertrophy, a bigger prostate, because the lack of progesterone results in that prostate getting big. And that's where men often then start developing urinary hesitancy and retention, and concomitant with the retention and the stretched bladder, damage to the penile nerves and erectile dysfunction often follows the prostatic hypertrophy. And mm-hmm. so I start almost all of our men on progesterone in an effort to saturate those alpha estrogen receptors and prevent the enlargement of the prostate. Okay. So that's the part of your story that does concern me. You may well have prostatic hypertrophy because you got the testosterone to stimulate. You being a man will convert some of that testosterone into estrogen. And because the alpha receptor for the estrogen in the prostate is now altered, you may be getting some immortalization of the prostate tissues. Okay.
Correct. And absolutely asymptomatic in every other way.
Right. But it can be rising. The other thing is, you know, especially if we're sexually active, okay, mm-hmm. the prostate is obviously connected to the urethra that allows the urine to leave the through the penis. And when men are having sex, that penis is being put in non-sterile places. You know, vaginas are not sterile receptacles, and so it is perfectly possible to end up with bacteria or viruses that make their way up into the prostate and give you rising PSA due to an inflammatory process. So unless you are celibate, that's always a possibility. So we have a lot of things to think about. Okay. There's a lot of things we want to think about besides prostate cancer.
So in other words, this is a matter of hormone balancing.
Frequently, it's certainly hormone balancing is involved in it. Mm-hmm. Now, again, having low progesterone and prostatic hypertrophy does not protect you against prostate cancer. So you can have both hypertrophy and cancer. Huh. So you need to get it checked out. Okay, I would say a 4K test. And or an MRI.
Urinalysis.
Yeah, there's things we can do to evaluate it and find out what your risk of a real cancer is besides just a rising PSA.
Of course. Excellent. Very helpful. I appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you, Bill, for your call.
Bye-bye.
Phone lines are open for your call as well. After the break, we'd love to talk with you. You're live on the show at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770 for Leading Edge Medicine. We'll be right back.
This is Carolyn. In our 60s, my husband and I were struggling with libido. And I've always called him Dudley Do-Right because he's such a good guy. But since longevity, now I'm calling him Studley Do-Right.
How sweet it is to be loved by you. Yes, baby. Ooh. How sweet it is to be loved by you. Ooh, baby. I needed the shelter of someone's arms. And there you were.
More Leading Edge Medicine. We have lots to talk about, always with Dr. Samira Umat here, Dr. Jerry Mixon here. My name is Lynette, and we're glad you're here as well. Before we take another call, and we can take your call, we have time for a couple more, 800-465-8770. We do have a question here about, hopefully a question that one of the doctors can talk about. Can you take a memory pack if you are on a blood thinner? So memory packs must be one of the supplement packages that we have at longevity.
Pack, yeah. I don't see any reason not to.
I'm kind of running the list of things in that memory pack.
It's lots.
It's humongous.
There's lots. I mean,
so I'm trying to remember if there's anything specifically.
Vitamin K is one thing that I'm thinking about. And then there are other, you know, you've put turmeric, ashwagandha, bacopa.
Well, but also which blood thinner are we talking about? Yeah. It makes a difference.
That's right. It does.
A totally different situation with Eliquist versus
warfarin.
You know?
Right. You're very right.
And so I'd want to know first, what blood thinner are we talking about? Mm-hmm. And then, quite frankly, I'd want to go back and look at the doses of the things in the memory pack. Interestingly, that we did we revised the memory pack slightly, dropped out vitamin D recently. And then, as I was talking about this other supplement that I'm investigating that does, we know, improve memory in people that are getting some cognitive decline, mm-hmm. I am looking at the possibility of revising the memory rather dramatically and using that new compound as the base and see if I can get the cost down.
Okay, after the radio show, you and I are going to talk.
It's going to be a conversation.
He tells the listeners everything before.
Well,
before the medical director of the clinic.
Subject came up.
Well, yeah, somebody asked, you know.
That's
I mean,
right.
Our listeners are wise, right? So they know
do.
What to ask.
Listeners read, and they have issues. And,
they do.
You know, and I'm not going to hide it from them, though you notice I did not tell them the name.
Did
of
not
the
tell them the name,
that's
which
right.
is good because
I'm still in the process of doing the research.
I mean, yeah, we would be inundated with phone calls. Or where is it? I want it. Give
yes,
it to me.
Right, please, right now.
Yes, although I have to admit I have ordered some for me.
All right, Jerry, we'll go there later.
Okay.
Let's answer the question.
We have Sylvia calling. She's University Place.
Okay.
All right. Sylvia, hi there. Good morning.
Hi, Sylvia.
Good morning.
How can we help, ma'am?
Well, I have been, 10 years ago, I had my left lung removed at Seattle because of lung cancer.
Uh-huh.
I have been clean from cancer until I went to test in September for my yearly physical.
Uh-huh.
The doctor there told me that my type of lung cancer is growing in both lungs now and that he has nothing for me to do. I told him I was on a lot of vitamins and minerals and stuff, and he said I have to accept the fact that I can do nothing. I followed through on a second opinion from a Dr. Osford in Olympia Hospital. He is a lung cancer person.
Uh-huh.
I had blood tests and CAT scan and all done, and he says there is nothing that he can do either. So right. Now I'm ready to come and see Dr. Mixon, I think, and look for alternative care.
Whimper. All right, look, I am not an oncologist. If you got two oncologists who say that you have widespread, it sounds like metastatic lung cancer, and that they can't help you, I can tell you that
right.
my chances of help you are right down around zero, too. I'm going to tell you the same thing.
I am 92 years old, and I'm feeling very good. I have a very positive attitude, and I live by myself, and I'm taking care of things. I don't have Parkinson's, or anything else, except this lung cancer.
Okay. Let me tell you what I can do. Okay, and I'm going to tell you the same thing I told my mother when she showed up with 5 tumors in her brain. Okay. And I told her, Mom, I love you. I can't save you from this disease. I can make sure you never hurt. I can make sure that you live your life as fully as possible, as long as possible. That's all I can ever offer in this sort of situation. Now, if you want to come see us, we're happy to see you, but you have to understand we are going to make zero representation that we can fix a widespread recurrent lung cancer. Can't do it. What we could do, and what I will be happy to work with Dr. Umat on, because I don't see patients anymore, she's the one who gets stuck with the really tough cases, okay, is we can do everything that we know how to do to boost your immune response to the highest level possible, to give you the best chance of slowing the tumor growth, to give you as many good days as we can for as long as we can, and we can see to it that you are kept as comfortable and functional as possible as long as possible. That's about the most we could possibly offer.
That's a whole lot.
All right. Okay. Well, if that's what you want to,
I'm going to make an appointment with, what is the address of your office? I don't know where that is.
Okay. Well, the office that we would have you come to, because it's the office that Dr. Umat is at, is in our Kirkland Clinic on Juanita Bay. And it's, I think, 9757
Juanita Drive.
Northeast Juanita Drive.
In Kirkland.
In Suite 200.
Yes.
So we're on the second floor.
Okay. Who do I call to make that appointment?
Oh, we'll give you that phone number right now. Okay, Sylvia? All right. That number is 1-866-86-YOUNG. Y-O-U-N-G. Okay? That's how you remember it. Yeah, 866-86 and then spell out YOUNG or 6864. That'll get you to us.
Let me have the address again.
97. Yes, 9757 Northeast Juanita Drive.
Suite 200.
Suite 200, Kirkland, Washington. 98033, I think it is. Is it 3-3 or 4?
3-4.
3-4.
Very good.
Right.
I have a wonderful son, Paul, that would be happy to take me there.
Good. Because having a son who really cares is really important.
Absolutely.
Because you're going to need all the love and care you can get over this next little period. Okay?
And
all right, my dear.
In prayer and meditation, too. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sylvia.
Ma'am. Take care. Bye-bye.
Oh, so sweet. And a heart.
My heart goes
going
out
to you, Sylvia.
My gosh, 92 years old.
And
I love
so
it.
So spry. Yeah. And
the attitude, you know.
Attitude.
She wants to fight it.
We can learn something from that.
You know, my mom did the same thing when she developed her brain tumors.
Yeah.
You know, with the widespread of 5 separate tumors we could see, we knew it wasn't a primary tumor. It was something spread from somewhere else. Mm. She didn't want to bother looking for where else. She said, it was already spread to my brain. Mm. You know, I'm not going to undergo chemotherapy. I'm not going to get radiation. I'm not going to get all these things.
Right.
The neurosurgeons wanted to do a brain biopsy. She said, no, you're not opening up my head.
Mm.
You know, she said, I accept the fact that I'm going to die from this, but I'm going to live until I die.
Yep.
And so she stayed independent in her own home until she couldn't. And then I brought her over to stay with me. And then from there, we moved her into a wonderful place called Abundance Love Family Home.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a place that gave her abundance love. They only had 3 or 4 clients at a time.
Mm.
And they were there 24 hours a day, and she just got wonderful care. And I was in to see her twice a day, most days. And when she finally did go downhill, she died in my arms.
Aww.
You know, she was on the bed, and as her breathing was slowing down, I crawled up on the bed with her. And I wasn't sure if she knew I was there or not, but I knew I was there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I put my cheek against hers so she could feel me with her as her breathing stopped.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sylvia may just want to have you there by her.
Well, she mentioned she has a son.
Yes, she does.
That's
precious son. That is so important. We're going to quickly go to a break here and be back with another phone call. And we have time for just a couple more calls, yours included, at 800-465-8770 for Leading Edge Medicine. 800-465-8770. We'll be back.
You hear all the time about fitness and doing exercise. Where do you get the energy to start your exercise program? With Longevity, I was able to start my exercise program, and that parlayed into more energy, of which I ended up going from 220 pounds to about 180 pounds in about 2 years. And that has changed my life. And that's why I tell everyone I know about Longevity.
Really, 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 are you really mine? Really, 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 are you really mine?
You tell me that you love me, and you tell me that you want me, and you even wear my graduation ring. It's too wonderful, it's too beautiful, it's a fantastic thing. Are you really, really mine?
Welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. A few more minutes left of our show today. We're glad you're here. Happy New Year. We're going to say that until the end of January. Is that okay?
It's okay with me.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's okay with me. Absolutely. I took down the decorations a little early this year. Normally, I leave them up.
And after that, we've got the Chinese New Year coming up.
There you go.
Is that what it is?
That's getting very close.
Keep wishing you Happy New Year.
That's right. It's at the end of January, but it's 2 weeks long. It's a two-week celebration.
I love it. It's a long celebration. That's a good thing. Leading Edge Medicine, 800-465-8770 to be on the show today. Bob calling in from Maple Valley today. Hi, Bob.
Hello, Maple Valley, Bob. How are you today?
Oh, good. Thank you for taking my call. So my question is about getting a booster. Can you hear me okay?
We can indeed.
Okay, so I'm 74. My BMI range is between 24 and 25. Mm-hmm. And in May of 2021, I got two of the Moderna shots. First one, no reaction. Second one was pretty severe. But I got it in the morning. The first night I had fever, aches and pains up the stomach, all of them. Mm. Next morning when I got up, I about passed out. When I walked into the bathroom, I crawled back into the bed, and I was just in and out of it all day long. So the question is, I'm due for a booster, but am I one of these, low percentage people? So I noticed maybe a couple months ago, about 50,000 Medicare patients die within 14 days of getting these shots. I looked up, there's about 62 million people on Medicare, and if 80% of those get the shot, that's about 50 million. So 50,000 over 50 million is about a tenth of a percent or less. Probably not all of those died from the shot. So
Medicare, we know they're all over 8%
or less.
Yeah, because on Medicare, they're all over 65. And so typically, those that are dying are in their 80s. So, your risk from the shot is very low as far as dying goes. Now, your risk of getting a reaction, since you had a reaction before, is relatively high. The ameliorating fact here, though, is that the dose is half strength. So they don't give you the full strength that you got before. And so, the first time I got the shot, I had no reaction. The second shot I got, I was tired and achy and just didn't feel good for the second day. When I got my booster, I had no reaction at all, except I got it first thing in the morning, and I was just tired that evening. I went to bed at 7 o'clock, and I slept in until 7 the next morning. But that was my only reaction from the booster. So I had less reaction from my booster than I had from my second shot. Now, I can't swear that that's what will happen with you, but it seems to be happening with most.
I guess my concern is whether I'm in that, you know, low percentage group. And yeah. There's like 50,000 within 2 weeks of getting the shot. So that's, yes. there's a correlation there. And, you know,
there well may be. Yeah.
What are my chances seeing that I, you know, about blacked out the next day? And yeah. I was in and out of it. My wife was ready to take me to the emergency.
Right. Well, I'd say, you know, you might want to prep yourself with some Benadryl. Just as a mild, you know, anti-allergy sort of thing. And see if that helps. But, you know, you're at an age that you are more risk from COVID than you are from the booster. So it's, you know, it's a matter of which gives you the biggest risk. Omicron is less... Go ahead, we're talking over each other.
Omicron is kind of like, you know, Omicron is, you know, really less lethal. It's way down there. So my place in the progression of the pandemic that maybe that's not the same anymore.
Yes, I agree. Omicron is far less virulent. On the other hand, among the elderly unvaccinated, we are seeing some deaths. Now, you are vaccinated, so the odds are you will not get a lot of protection. You won't get a lot of illness if you get Omicron. The other thing that I'm going to, and you can take this as an argument against your booster if you want, we found that when you got your first two shots at your age group, you lost 50% of your protection in 5 months. With the booster, what we're finding is in our age group, you and me, we're losing 50% of the protection from the booster in 10 weeks, in 2.5 months. So the booster is giving us protection in our 70s half as long as the original two shots. And the original two shots were only 5 months. And what we're seeing now in Israel, where they've started using a second booster, a fourth shot, is that the protection is even shorter. It seems that the more boosters people are getting, the less duration the protection tends to be.
Out of the EU, they're warning that you can get immune, you know, fatigue if you just keep taking these every couple of months.
And that's the question, is to what extent is immune fatigue going to show up? Because we know that, you know, we lost the original two in 5 months. We lose the booster in 2.5 months. At what point is it diminishing returns? Especially with a version of the disease with Omicron that is only killing the absolute most feeble and debilitated. It is not knocking down, you know, relatively healthy people. You're not morbidly obese. Your age is a risk factor. But if you're fit and exercising, your risk of dying from this disease is extremely low. I guess here's the point I would ask you to weigh. Our overlords and masters in the government are going to start requiring you to be boosted in order to be considered fully vaccinated. So you may have to give up going to restaurants, traveling on airplanes, and that sort of thing. So public facilities may not be in your future if you do not do what they tell you to do and go get your booster. God, I hate saying that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. The other thing, too, that some of these big studies out of Sweden, like with 16 million people, after a couple hundred days, this thing, it can actually go negative. It can make you more susceptible.
Do you have any comment on that? Well, no, and we're saying that not just in Sweden, but also in Finland and in the U.K. It may well be that we're actually seeing increased susceptibility in some subpopulations after their multiple boosters. So, you know, once more, I'm encouraged by the fact that Omicron is less lethal. I hope that this is the way that it is evolving, that our next variant will be even less lethal than this. And my hope, though I can't swear it'll happen, but it's what usually happens, my hope is that we are seeing the end of the true pandemic and the migration of COVID into a episodic seasonal disease that we will see in the winter in the north countries and in the summer when they go inside in air conditioning in the southern states, and that we're going to stop shutting things down and masking, and we're going to go back and get our lives back. I think the society will be ready for that far before the government. So,
could I ask one more question?
Sure.
We got just about 2 minutes.
America One Insurance, mm-hmm. these are guys that are big life insurance, group life insurance.
Sure.
And that CEO came out and said that there's a 40% increase in mortality in working at between 18 and 64, and they say that's like, one in 200 event would be 10%. 400% is just unheard of, and they're saying they see that across the industry. And so,
the question is why, and
COVID-related or vaccine-related?
Probably not. No, we're a large portion of that is overdose. We've abandoned our southern border. Basically, Mr. Biden has turned the southern border of the United States over to the drug cartels. And so we have about a 600% increase in lethal drugs coming across our border. We have over 100,000 Americans died of drug overdoses last year. And it's accelerating rapidly as the drugs are flooding in. Suicide rate is rising dramatically among young people. When you put people in isolation and shut them down, they get depressed. And so psychiatric diseases that result in suicide are becoming rampant in our society. And if you want to blame it on COVID, you can, but it's not the COVID. It's the way we reacted to COVID. It's the politicians that are resulting in this mass death. I wish I could grab Joe by the ear and sit him down and maybe, Emsley with him and explain to them that their impact on human beings is horrible and they are causing a lot of people to be disabled and killed and that they need to stop this crap. But,
I agree with you. And your perspective is always fantastic. Thank you for that.
All right. Thank you,
Bob.
Sir. Bye-bye.
Wow. What a good show today. So many different topics. We talked about eyes. We talked about CPAP machines, prostate, of course, blood thinners, hormone levels, and of course, COVID always seems number one. We're here because of Longevity Medical Clinics. We want you to be healthy. We want you to be strong. We're here answering questions, and so many of our patients will call in, and we totally appreciate that. But a lot of you out there are still wondering, can we still come in for the health analysis this year? Absolutely is the answer. Come in, get that free health analysis appointment at Longevity Medical Clinic. Find out where you are. What is that? If you don't measure, you don't know.
That's true.
Come in, get your two tests, your blood and your in-body test, a blood test and an in-body test. Then you will find out your risk chances for things like dementia, cancers, joint problems, sexual dysfunction, heart disease, and you can find out more by taking a large panel blood test and get even more answers with our health advocate and with the doctors here at Longevity. Don't put off another year. Make 2022 your year to get in, to get healthier, get stronger, get faster, leaner, smarter, and doctors together.
sexier. Here's that phone number to call at Longevity. It's 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. Or you can go online right now and make that free health analysis appointment at lmclinic.com. That's lmclinic.com. We would love to see you at the beginning of this year, to see a healthier you at the end of the year. On behalf of Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, thank you for tuning in, for being part of the show today. I'm Lynette, and we'll be right back next week right here on Leading Edge Medicine. Have a great weekend.